ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಚಂದ್ರಾಯ ರಾಧಿಕಾಯ ಏಕದಾಲಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಭಕ್ತಾಯ ಭಕ್ತಾಯ ನಮೋ ವಂಚಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯೈವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ಮಹಾಮದನ್ನಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಪ್ರದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ನಾಮ್ನೇ ಗೌರವಿಸು. We are discussing graduation of bhakti. And according to that, a stage of bhakti, the bhakts are called superior or inferior. There are some degradation. Gradation. All are okay. But still, we can honor them knowing in what stage the devotee is. Kanishtam, Madhyam, and Uttam. And then according to this, according to degree of bhakti, we can honor them. Otherwise, you cannot develop. So, first of all, we should know what is bhakti. This is the barometer, this definition of bhakti. So first we should all know what is bhakti really. And then we should use this barometer. And then you easily decide that in what stage that bhakti is. I think first it has been defined in Kapil Devuti Shamba. Kapil has instructed his mother about Bhakti Yoga, Lakhanam Di Bhakti Yoga Shadis. And he has told so many things. Can you tell something? We don't remember. Who remember? Anyone? Oh, let me see that. Try to read all these things. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no upper chilka. Chilka means skin. No any hard thing, no seed, only rush and rush from top to bottom. So, any part of Srimad Bhagavatam, can it be reasoned? So first begin from a couple days with this. And here he has given definition of it. Who was he? Kapil was son of Kardam Rishi. And who was Kardam Rishi? He was some manifestation of himself, Krishna.
Kardam Rishi?
Yeah. Like Rishabhdev, Shatya Vishabha, like this. All can be told manifestation. And very soon, he retired from worldly life, gave up everything, and he went to do aradhana of his aradhare in forest. Think that all world, this is like falls, all the rations are falls. knowing this, he was not entangled and he left all. But he told Kapil Dev to help her mother, his mother. So one day, Devuti asked some questions. I want to know the aim and object of all souls. He was Shakta Vesh avatar and he wanted to teach others by his career. Like Krishna obeys his father. No? He does Aradhana at the bank of Radha Kund. I remember not that is. Anyhow, they do more. Krishna has did Aradhana of Shankar. And by that boon he received one son. So no harm. This is Laukiki Lila.
Yeah.
So don't disturb in the middle. So Kapil Dev, he answered in so many chapters. Essence is that the life of God is to attain pure bhakti. No prominency of grihastha dharma. Always entangled in grihastha dharma. Always involving in protection, supporting, nourishing their children and all these things. One day you will have to give it, possibly, if you are not giving it. So you should try to do bhakti. And what is bhakti? Lakhanam hi nirgun. Nirgunasya, bhakto yogasya, udharita, ahetukya, abhyavyacharya, purushottam. This. But Rupa Goswami, taking everything inside his definition, all this also, this also, and so many definitions are here and there. Also, Rishi, Ishwari, Paranurakti, Ishwari, everything. So many. But it includes in Srila Rupa Goswami. And that is Anna Bhilashita Shunya. Gyan Karmat Dhyana Pratam. Ankulena Krishna Mushila Bhakti. In a brief you should explain. Try to hear very carefully.
चक्षूरमृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. Shri Gurudev, what it means to explain in brief this verse, which is so dear to all Gaudiya Vaishnavas, those who are the followers of Srila Rupa Goswami Party. Because, as Srila Gurudev explained, taking the essence of all the previous definitions of pure bhakti, and Vidyasya Pranaya, being inspired within his heart by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Rupa Goswami Pada revealed the supreme, most comprehensive and profound definition of pure bhakti which had ever been seen in the history of the world existence. What is that? Anya Vilashita Shunyam Jnana Kama Dena Vritam Anukulyena Krishna Rushunam Bhakti Uttama. What is Uttama Bhakti? It means the continuous, unbroken cultivation of all the endeavors of the body, mind, and words, and also of the emotions, transcendental emotions of the heart, that is called bhav, which are meant exclusively for the welfare, for the benefit of Krishna. This is a description of the swarup lakshana, or the intrinsic characteristic of uttama bhakti. The continuous cultivation of all endeavors, continuous help, just like honey flowing from a jar. If you pour water, it may splash here and there, but honey will come in a very thick stream, unbroken. So when the chitta vritti, the tendency of the heart, is flowing without any interruption or any obstacle in the service of Krishna, by heart, feelings, by body, by mind, by words, everything in his service, this is the intrinsic nature of uttama bhakti.
No.
Yet,
something wrong. It is bhakti. It is bhakti. But when swarup lakshan and tatastha lakshan will be added to it, then it will be uttama. Otherwise, not. Only what? Spontaneous will not do.
Yes.
Because who did it? And in 6 months he received God. But there was something like no swarup lakshan or tatastha lakshan was there. Vasaka. So it is bhakti by Krishna Anushilanam bhakti. But when Anukulena Krishna Anushilanam with Anyabhilashita Sunnan Gyan Karma Anachari, then it will be Uttama. Understand? Yes, then Uttama. Otherwise, Samanam of Krishna is not Uttama. Again, clarify what I told.
So, this is the swarup lakshana. That means the intrinsic characteristic of uttama bhakti. But it will not be called uttama bhakti unless the tatastha lakshana, that means the marginal characteristic, the extrinsic characteristics of bhakti are there. So, what is that? Bhakti has been described swarup lakshana. But it will only be called uttama bhakti when those things which are not included in pure bhakti have also been rejected. That is describing the first part of the sloka. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana-kanam-kanam-kanam-kanam-kanam-kanam-kanam-kanam-kanam-kanam. If someone is endeavoring completely by body, mind, and words, and by heart's feelings in the service of Krishna, but they are not anyabhilashita shunyam, that means completely devoid even of a smell, the slightest trace of any other desire. And also, they should not be completely free from karma or jnana, but their activities, their karma, and their jnana, their knowledge, should not cover their bhakti. In other words, everyone has to do some karma. You have to eat, you have to walk, and go here and there, take a bath, use the bathroom. These are all activities. But if someone has faith in karmakanda, fruitive activities, and thinks that this will support and nourish and uplift their bhakti, or they think that to neglect karma, that means the prescribed duties in the scripture, that by neglecting these, it will be detrimental to the cultivation of their bhakti. In other words, they have faith in karma, then that karma that they perform will cover their bhakti. And similarly with jnana, knowledge of the soul, the Atman, a knowledge of Bhagavan will not present an obstacle. But if they cultivate jnana, nirvishesh jnana, in personal knowledge, that Bhagavan, Brahma and Atman, they are one, then this will make a big obstacle and it will cover bhakti. So in essence, the continuous cultivation of all endeavors of the body, mind and words, and also internal moods, which are meant exclusively for the benefit of Krishna, and those activities are not covered by karma or jnana, and that person has not the slightest sense of any other desire other than desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, then his activity can be called uttama bhakti, or transcendental devotional service.
But what is the meaning of anukulena Krishna anushilana?
So here, As I was trying to explain, that the cultivation of these activities, they are for the benefit of Krishna. I have not mentioned for the happiness of Krishna. Why? Because we see that sometimes in the Leela of Krishna, because he's playing like doing Narvak Leela, human-like pastimes, some of the activities of his devotees do not seem to please him. For example, if Mother Yashoda will bind him, Krishna will cry. If she will twist his ear and give him a slap for stealing, then Krishna will become upset. So sometimes Mother Yashoda will chastise Krishna, and this makes him become upset. But here, Anukulyena indicates that this is for the benefit of Krishna, not necessarily for his immediate happiness. In other words, Mother Yashoda is thinking, oh, if he will steal here and there, then if I don't discipline him, when he grows up, he may become a dacoit and his life will be spoiled. So she'll twist his ear and give him some discipline, only to, so that in the future, he may be happy. So here, Anukulyena means for his benefit. If we take the word Anukulyena to mean for Krishna's happiness, then there'll be some defects in the definition. Why? Because even demons, like the wrestlers Chanur and Mustika, they were fighting with Krishna. They would beat Krishna with their fists and wrestle with him. And this wrestling of the demons with Krishna made him happy. He was happy to wrestle with them. But can it be said that those demons, they are doing bhakti? It can't be said that they're doing bhakti. So here specifically, our acharyas have explained that the word anukulyena means that pratikul bhav rahita, that the activity should be pratikul bhav rahita, devoid of any antagonistic mood towards Krishna. Whether the activity makes him happy or not is immaterial. The point is that the person who's doing the activity should be pratikul bhav rahita, devoid of any antagonistic mood. And on the other hand, the activity may be giving Krishna happiness, but those demons, Chanur and Mustika, they never had Krishna's future or welfare in mind. They were full of antagonistic mood. And therefore, though the activity gave Krishna happiness, it cannot be called anukulyena Krishna anuchinanam. So, to cover this...
What is the meaning here? Anukulyena, okay. Mm-hmm. But anusilanam, why?
Anusilanam.
Yes. Why anusilanam?
Anusilanam.
Now, the word anusilanam. Here,
the meaning is clear from anukulyena. Mm-hmm. But why anusilanam?
Here, anusilanam. There are two parts to this word. One, the upasaka, the prefix is anu. Anu means nirantar, continuous, without any break. And anu means anugatimahi, that bhakti is performed under guidance. In this world, if you want to hear, chant, and remember, then it will only be bhakti when we're performing these activities under the guidance of Mahabhagat Shuddha Vaishnava. Any pure devotee, then it will be bhakti. Mahat Kripa Bina Kaman Karma Bhakti Nai, Krishna Bhakti Dure Rahe, Sansana Himshay. Any activity that you do, even your hearing and chanting, remembering, unless it's done under guidance and with the mercy of any pure devotee, then it cannot be bhakti. What to speak of being bhakti, even one's entanglement in the material existence will not become diminished. So here, anu means continuously, and anu also means under the guidance of pure devotee. This means in this world it will be like that, and also eternally in that world will always be under guidance of those who are perfect and nitya siddha. So this ingredient in pure bhakti is absolutely essential, anu. And shilanam, shio dhatu, means cultivation, practice. An activity. And Shivdhatu has two aspects. That is called Bhavrup and Chastarup. Chastarup means the cultivation of activities. These activities have been divided into two parts, Sadhanrup and Karyarup. The Sadhanrup also has two parts. That is called Nivriti Atmaka Chastarupa and Pravriti Atmaka Chastarupa. In other words, the endeavor that we perform has two aspects. One aspect is those things which are favorable for devotional service, we should try very hard to adopt them in our activities. And it is also an aspect of Uttam Bhakti to very strictly avoid those things which would be unfavorable. So Sadhana Rupa has two aspects, to cultivate the things which are conducive and to very carefully avoid those things which are detrimental. And karya rup means the activities which are performed, not in the stage of sadhan. In the stage of sadhan, the devotee is engaging his senses. Kriti sadhya, bhavet sadhya, bhavasa sadhanambhida. By the senses of this body and his mind, he engages them in the angas of bhakti. So this is called indriya prerana or indriya vyapar, an affair of the senses. And the activities are instigated from the platform of the mature senses. But when his sadhana becomes mature, then his activities are called karya rup. They're not coming instigated from the senses, but rather shuddha sattva visheshatma prema soyam susangyabhak. The transcendental function of swarup shakti, bhakti shakti, has descended from the hearts of Nitya Siddha Parikara, the associates of Radha and Krishna, and come into his heart. So now, his Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering, is all undertaken as anubhavs, or the consequences of the movement of bhakti shakti within his heart. So this is a summary of Chestaru, the endeavor part of this verb, shield, shield dhatu, shilanam. And the other side is called bhavaru. Service to Krishna is not only done by one's activities, but also by one's emotions. So this bhavarup has been divided into two parts, sthayi bhavarup and vyabhichari bhavarup. Sthayi bhavarup includes one relationship, permanent relationship, either the mood of santa, santarati, or dasyarati, servitor mood, or serving Krishna by having the mood of being his friend, sakyarati, or vatsalyarati, the mood of Krishna's parent, or madhuryarati, the mood of Krishna's sweetheart or beloved.
Thank you. But something to try to understand. Oh, from bahyarus, externally, it seems that ankulyan and anushilan both have one meaning. But really not. A tree may be uncool for Krishna, but not silanam. He has no chesta,
activity,
no relation with Krishna. So his bhakti is not uttama or even bhakti. Not for braja trees. All are transcendental. But in general, so, a tree or anything, they can be anukul, favorable to Krishna, but they have no activity to serve Krishna. So, this anukulta will not do. So, that is why anusilanam is bhakti. So, both are needed here. Now, we should come to point. This definition should be applied to Dhruva. He has some anna philosophy and no ankullena Krishna Anushila. He was like a karma. But bhakti is of two kinds, pradhani bhuta and guni bhuta. Guni bhuta bhakti is called karma or gyan. Only where there is bhakti is prominent, karma and gyan are serving prominent, then it will be pradhani bhuta bhakti. So he has dhruva. Pradhani bhuta, bhakti bhuta, bhakti. And also fruitive, shakam bhakti. So he will not touch this definition. So Vaishnav don't want to be like Dhruva. No? Something they can take, how he practiced, but not either. Oh, why you are sleeping? Don't sleep. Oh, open your eyes, then something will come. then apply it.
Guni
Bhuta.
Prahlad Maharaj is, Dhruva Maharaj is Guni Bhuta.
Guni Bhuta. Like Karmi, Sakam, for, he did for kingdom. So, it will not be Uttama Bhakti. Not so much. Not so much. Like Prahlad and others. Like Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, like this. Something. But purity. Sakam. Then we should come to Devahuti. Oh, Kapil Dev taught so many things, so many teachings he gave. But in the last, what became? Nirvana Prapti. It has written Nirvana Prapti. Who was his Aradhya Dev? Who was? Not like anything. To whom he used to worship? Krishna, Ram, Nrisimhadeva, or whom? Oh, Brahma. Who Brahma? Who Brahma? You should read thoroughly and then, otherwise you cannot understand. You have not read anything. First read and then carefully. And then hear, and then you can try to hear very carefully. Here Devahuti was told what is bhakti. But the fruit of bhakti is not Brahma Nirvana.
Devahuti shit was a Nirvana Prapti.
Brahma Nirvana. It is written. There was no special Aradhya Dev, Nrisimha, Vaman, Kalki, Ram, Balaram, all. So he, Brahma Nirvans, what meaning? Always he used to see Brahmin ho, all
living
entities. And in living entity, oh, he used to see Brahma. But Brahma is Nirakar, Nirgun, Niranjan, no form, nothing, Nirgunam. So, it does not come in Uttama Bhakti definition. Any bhakti will refuse to take from Krishna all kinds of Nirvana. There are so many kinds of Nirvana, but anyone will not take. So, also we reject for pure devotees. Something is to be taken. What Kapil Dev told her. But not Brahma Nirvana or anything. Now come to Bharat Rishi. What kind of bhakti was of Bharat Rishi? And what was his career? Can you Bhakti Sahar? Can you?
I am prepared to dictate
to you. You? You want to take rest?
Oh. So Radharani Mahal told that he used the benefit of all, not happiness for Krishna. And he gave example of Mother Yashoda. Mother sleeping or twisting his ears, why? For Krishna's benefit. But when Krishna wrestling with Sakhas, then what benefit Sakhas is giving to Krishna?
Who Sakha?
Sridham, Subal, Madhumunga.
Or to please Krishna.
Similarly here, then he has to add Anukullan Anusilanam, not only benefit. Benefit but happiness but his favorable mood.
Pratikul Bhav Rohita on the other side. Yes. Okay. Good idea. You tend to drink cold drink?
No cold.
No cold drink? It seems.
Some sort of.
And if you just try, and if you not come, then other way.
So Srila Gurudev has instructed me to explain the history of Bharat Maharaj. So,
no. In brief, you can tell the life history of Bharat. But try to apply that definition on him, that it was pure Uttama Bhakti or not. I want this. This is the point. Not to elaborate, explain so much of his life history. All knows perhaps. So in brief, you should do, and then apply that.
I'll try to tell a synopsis of Bharat Maharaj and how his bhakti was graded in this definition of pure bhakti, anyabhidashi. So Bharat Maharaj, as we know, was a very great king, and he was the emperor of the whole world.
Who was his guru? Without guru, any cannot disciple cannot be authorized of bhakti. Who was guru?
Oh yes. So Bharat Maharaj, actually he was the son of Maharaj Rishabhdev. And Rishabhdev was actually an incarnation of Krishna. He was also Shakti Avesh avatar of Krishna. And Maharaj Rishabhdev was an emperor who, before he left his kingdom to his sons, he had 100 sons, before he left his kingdom to them, he sat them down and he explained all of the necessary knowledge that they would have to know in order to attain perfection in their human form of life. So the instructions of Sri Rishabhdev are there in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So by hearing these instructions, Bharat Maharaj became the emperor of the world after his father had retired and taken and shown the path for all the entities of how to become a perfectly renounced person within this world. The whole activities of Rishabhdev are explained, how he wandered everywhere throughout the world like an avadut, completely detached from all material pleasures and pains. Even he was not identifying at all with his body, not even wearing clothing. He was a Paramahansa Mahabhagavat and showing to the whole world how to attain the path of pure God-realization. So after Maharaj Rishabhdev had left the kingdom, his sons, they also took this path. Some of them were called the Prachetas. And later on, they became educated by Narad Rishi, and they also attained liberation. But Bharat Maharaj understood the teachings of his father, and he took reign of the kingdom. But after reigning the kingdom for some time, he internally was so very devoted to Krishna, devoted to the Supreme Lord Bhagavan, that any attachment to the kingdom was completely insignificant to him. Even though he owned so much wealth, vast wealth, had very beautiful family, everything, he gave it up as if, just like if a person goes into the toilet and passes stool, and then he leaves that behind. No attachment whatsoever. So in the same way it is described, Bharat Maharaj left his kingdom without any attachment at all, and he went into the forest to perform austerities, to practice the pathway of pure bhakti within the forest, and to bhajan. To serve Bhagavan. So when he was there in the forest, he was performing in a very beautiful ashram on the bank of sacred river, and he was staying in very purified condition, and always controlling his mind and senses, and fixing his attention upon the service of Bhagavan. But one day, as he was there, absorbed in his meditations, and actually tasting very high states of transcendental bliss, coming to the level of path he was experiencing within his heart. But here in the forest, he was all alone. He was without any other sangha, no other association. So when he was there one day, he saw a mother deer, and this mother deer was pregnant. And she was sitting on one side of a stream. And as she was sitting there, suddenly a very ferocious tiger roared very, very loudly behind her. And in very great fear, she immediately leapt up and she jumped across the stream. And as she jumped across, this baby deer that was within her womb, just about ready to take birth, immediately came out of her womb and fell there into the stream. And when she came to the other side of the stream, she looked back and she saw Bharat Maharaj standing there looking at this scene. And she looked with very pitiful eyes at Bharat Maharaj, as if to say, oh, please help my baby deer. And then she died there on the spot. So Bharat Maharaj, he felt compassion in his heart when he saw this baby deer lying there. And he went there and brought it out of the water and brought it back with him to his ashram. And now Bharat Maharaj began to take care of the baby deer. And with actual great affection, he was feeding the baby deer, and he was petting the baby deer. And as the baby deer was growing more and more, he became more and more attached to it. And to the extent that he was sometimes kissing the deer, he was giving the deer pet names, he was sometimes reciting poetry and composing so many songs to sing to the deer. And in this way, he became so much distracted from his pure devotional practices that he gave them up. And now he was just absorbed in this deer. So at this time, when the deer had grown, he also saw another flock of deer coming by. And then he ran toward that place. And Bharat was lamenting and lamenting, oh, where is my deer gone? And he came back and he was thinking to himself, oh, what kind of impious activities have I done that now I do not have the association of my dear friend, this deer, anymore. So in this way, Bharat Maharaj, who actually at one stage had become so advanced in the development of his focus and concentration on his worship of the Supreme Lord, now his whole process of bhakti bhajan had degraded to the point where he practically forgot all of his practices. Now in this condition, Bharat Maharaj, at that time, he met with one accident in the forest, and he met with his death. And at the time of his death, he was fully absorbed in thinking of this deer. So, what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Yamyam vapi smaram bhavam tyajat tanti kaleguram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavita. Whatever someone is meditating upon very deeply at the time when he leaves this body, then in his next life, without fail, he will attain that same state. So Bharat Maharaj, by the laws of material nature, by the laws of karma, immediately now, he took his birth in the womb of a deer. And he got the body of a deer. But because of his absorption and his desire to approach the Supreme Lord in his previous life's activities, by the mercy of Krishna, he was given the opportunity that he would be able to remember what was his previous life and how he had made such a mistake that he had given up his spiritual practices and become attached to this deer. So now, in this body of a deer, he resolved that he would not waste this opportunity, even though he did not have human body, and he could not perform all the activities of bhakti bhajan, hearing, chanting, and so forth, but he availed himself of every opportunity in that deer body. In the forest, there were so many sages meditating. He would go there and he would sit where the sages were. He would take advantage of their association. He would hear when they would be performing any kirtan or harikata, and he would take remnants of their mahaprasadam. And like this, in this way, he spent his whole life as a deer. And at the end of that deer life, then he took birth in the family of a very high Brahmin family. And in that birth, now, he was named Jalabharat. Because now, he resolved that he would not make the mistake that he had made and had delayed his progress back to Krishna. So in this birth, he decided that he would try at any cost to avoid bad association, any kind of detrimental association that would take him from the path of bhakti. So even though he had taken birth in a Brahmin family, and his father was a very purified Brahmin and Vaishnava, and he was trying to teach him all of the proper devotional activities. But Jad Bharat, now he was posing himself as being very ignorant, being jara, like a piece of stone, not like a very foolish kind of person who cannot learn anything. So whenever the father was trying to teach him even ordinary simple activities, like keeping himself clean, passing stool, then washing, he would do the opposite. He would first wash and then pass stool. And in this way, they were thinking, oh, it is impossible. We cannot try and teach him in any way. And they, practically speaking, gave up like this. But in that family, he had 9 brothers and sisters, and they were very, very ignorant. And they could not understand his condition at all. Actually, they were very envious of him as well. And they mistreated him so much. So they were giving him so many very menial activities and services to do, which, like, for example, sitting in the middle of a field and simply watching the crops and sitting there. And they would give him sometimes some very bad-tasting food. But Jad Bharat was very happy, because in this condition, no one was bothering him. Internally, he was completely absorbed in his meditation upon Krishna. And whatever would come to him, he did not protest at all. If they were mistreating him, very good, he did not protest. If they were giving him so many very bad-tasting scraps of food, oh, he would accept it like as if it was nectar. So in this way, Jad Bharat was passing his life and proceeding in his transcendental meditation, internal meditation. So Jad Bharat was on the stage of Bhav in his previous life, but because he had lost the association of sadhus, he had given up the association of devotees, and he had gone alone there to the forest and meditated. Because of this mistake, now he had to take birth. He had to go 3 different births before he would be able to attain perfection. So this story is illustrating that we should always try to avail ourselves of good association. This will protect our bhakti-lata creeper within our heart that is growing. If we stay always in good sadhu sangha, then this will enable us to proceed on the path of bhakti without any interruption and without any obstacle. So this is a very important lesson. And the level of bhakti which Jad Bharat was on, it was not completely on this level of pure shuddha bhakti, because at that time, Jad Bharat had deviated from the path. He was not completely fixed, and he had become deviated even by an ordinary material object of this world, a material living entity like a deer, very insignificant. So if his bhakti was properly fixed, and if he was an anugatya of Guru and Vaishnavas, then he would not have deviated in this way and made this mistake. So this important lesson to learn. Then in this life, as Jad Bharat, there is another teaching from the Srimad Bhagavatam, how Jad Bharat was one day walking here and there, and there was one king who was coming there and was being carried on a palanquin by his palanquin carriers. And at that time, Jad Bharat was walking along the roadside next to this palanquin, and one of the palanquin carriers was becoming very, very tired, and he could not carry the palanquin any longer. So the king ordered that they should get any strong, able-bodied person from amongst his subjects of the kingdom, and then that person should carry the palanquin. So when they saw Jad Bharat was very strong and very beautiful looking, very healthy, very strong body. So they decided, oh, he's a very suitable person, and immediately they took him and told him, here, you should help carry the palanquin. So he did not protest at all, because this was his position in this world. Whatever was coming to him, he was accepting this as the mercy of Krishna, completely surrendered to any situation, whether of happiness or distress. So then he began to carry the palanquin on his shoulders. And
they were proceeding along. There were four palanquin carriers. So as they were going along, the king was noticing that his palanquin was shaking and moving like this. And then he asked, "What is going on? Why are you carrying in this way?" He was chastising to the carriers. And they said, "Oh, it is not us. We are carrying all right, but this one, this new one in front, he is moving here and there." Actually, it was that Jan Bharat, he saw that there were so many ants crawling on the ground. And because he's self-realized, completely self-realized soul, he does not want to take the life of any living entity unnecessarily. So as he was walking, he wanted to step by the side and avoid any of these ants. And because of this, the palanquin was being shaken, and the king became very, very upset. And when they pointed to him, then the king, he began to, in very sarcastic words, he began to chastise to this pseudo-like person. And he chastised him. He told him that, are you so weak? I see that you are very, very weak and very feeble. Because actually he was very strong-bodied. But he told him, you're like a very weak person. And are you so tired also? You're very tired and very, very old also. And I see that perhaps it is that the others are not assisting you properly. So Jan Bharat, he heard these words. And then he did not protest at all. He simply heard them. And then the king told him, now you should carry properly. And again, they began to carry the palanquin. So as they were walking along, again, the palanquin began to shake like this. And now this Maharaj Rahugana was the name of this king. Now he began to chastise very severely to Jan Bharat. And he told him so many insulting words. And there's a very interesting dialogue full of so many deep philosophical discussions. But I'm begging pardon because my voice is...
Thank you. Madhava Maharaj, can you speak after that subject? What dialogue was between Jan Bharat and Rahugana? I will tell you the last. Because he criticizes everyone.
He knows something more.
That I want that he should be. When that king Rahugana chastised, "I will punish you. You are very fat. You should know that I am king. You are my subject." So many things he told. Then what he replied?
So, when Rahugana king chastised Rahugana was going to get some knowledge from maybe Kapil Dev or any other saintly person, but he is not completely aware from his bodily conception. So he thought, you are very sick, you are very feeble, this and that. But Bharatma's idea was that I am not this body, I am this
what
soul.
What he replied?
Bharatma replied, Rahugana tat tapasana jati.
No. Before that, it is in conclusion.
You have said everything correct.
Yes.
I am not fat, not weak.
He should tell what he told.
Bharat Maharaj told that yes, you have told correct. Because I, Jan Bharat, because I am not carrying the palanquin, neither I am old or nor a people. So what is carrying the palanquin? The soul he never carried a palanquin, and the soul neither old nor feeble, etc. So Bharat Maharaj giving him about conception about soul. What is the quality of pure soul? Bharat Maharaj instruct him by his teachings that Atma has few qualities. He never born, not increasing, not decreasing, like
he is not thin, not fat,
not fat, like for other thing. Jayaste asti vardhate, apakshyate vipainamate vinasate. The six guns of material world, jayate to take birth, asti existence, vardhate grow again and again, and jayate is vardhate apakshyate, then decay, then more decay, then finish. But for soul, this the soul of everyone in this, every soul of this world, they are free from of these six qualities. They are beyond or above these six material qualities. So Bharat Maharaj told him to about Atma, and he had conception about body. So he is fantastic word for Bharat Maharaj. You are so sick, or you could not carry, maybe you have not taken food for a few days. After the Bharat Maharaj told to him in his conclusion, Rahu ganita tapasana jati, na chandasa naiva jalagni surjai, na neva panad griyadva vina mahat padar yogi sekam. Rahu ganita tapasana jati, or Rahu gan king, but up to this, before to this point, Jarabharat never speak even words to anyone, neither Rahu gan king, nor his palanquin carrier, nor the other person. He told this first time. He told, oh, he came in my dynasty and he will divisate from bhakti. So he has his heart became melt. Karunaya vidravam deha. Due to mercy, his heart melt, so it bound to speak something. So he told to Rahugan king for whole world. What this thing? Rahugani tat tapasana jati. O King Rahugan, you are going for doing some austerity. But this is not proper process to do some austerity. What? Na chandasa naiva jalagni surjai. If you utter some slokas from Veda, chandasa means Veda, and naiva jalagni surjai, if you worship Agni, Jal means Varunde, and other demigods, this is also not proper process or proper channel. Na naiva panad grihadva. If you be in your householder life, or if you give another householder life, all these things are not proper process to get mercy of Bhagavan. So how it is possible? Bina mahat pada rajavi sekam. Unless until you are not smear your whole body, the feet dust of mahat purus, up to that point you not be completely pure, or you could not get mercy of Bhagavan. For where you are going, for what purpose you are going? Who is Mohan? And what to do? For that is told in other scriptures, like Chaitanya Charitamrita and others, and even the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Same thing as told in Prahlad Maharaj's teachings and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhakta pada dhuliyar, bhakta pada jal, bhakta bhukta sestin sadhaneval. 18 seva hai te krishna prema hai puna puna sarva sastre pukariya kai bhakta pada dhuli means feet dust of devotee. Here bhakta means mahapurush, bina mahapada rajivisekam, bhakta pada dhuli. Bhakta pada dhuli also two types. One, feet dust internal with his feet. Another, the feet dust who is on his, under his line, under his guidance, they are also feet dust. If you insult any Mahapurus, he may not take any offense because he is always absorbed in his service. But if feet dust means who is on his line, who is under his guidance, they will not excuse you. You have to be very careful. So, bhakta pada dhuli. Bhakta Pada Jal. Bhakta Pada Jal means it's pit bath water. And Bhakta Bhukta Ses means Sadhanayabal. Bhakta Bhukta Ses means 20-30 after prasad keep some remnant. That is called Bhakta Bhukta Ses. Another, what instruction coming from his lotus leg. That is also Bhakta Bhukta Ses. So if you serve this keeping, being without any hypocrisy, then you can get this napkin. Otherwise, not possible. So Bhagavan is telling here, you are going for some instruction for your austerity, maybe copy them in here, but you are not doing all these things. So it is not complete. Then he jumped up from his parent queen and flew full flat on the lotus feet of Jarubharat. And who are you? Are you Kapildev? I am going to get this knowledge from Kapildev or the Sunday person. Who are you? Then he gave his own identification. So, do you know about Bharat Maharaj? In your dynasty, I am same Bharat Maharaj, eldest son of Rishabdev. I was entangled with material thing, so I spoiled my life being a deer at first. I give up my household life. What purpose? Jyotushtajya darasutam suridrajya hridispisa jivaiva malavat taktajottam sloka lalasa. He gave up his young wife, youthful wife and children and name and fame and his kingdom. It's very hard for a young youth person to give up his full youth woman and small kids. And so much money, name and fame, it's very hard to give it up. But Prahlad Maharaj, Bharat Maharaj did, what purpose? For Uttam Sloka Lalasa, to get the mercy of Uttam Sloka. But here there is no clear conception. Who is his Uttam Sloka? Is he Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prem Purushottam Mahaprabhu, or Madhura Purushottam Lord Ramchandra, or Lila Purushottam Krishna Chandra? Not mentioned clearly. So though he is doing bhakti, but it is not uttama bhakti according to this shok, onna vilasita sunnam, jnana karma dana avitam, anupulena krishna anusilana muktir uttama. Here, not clearly he is doing anupulena krishna anusilam, or neither that marginal, definite marginal characteristic, onna vilasita sunnam and jnana karma dana avitam. If we are not Vilasa Sunnam, so why attached to us a deer? Okay, we are human beings. Maybe some subtle mood is there. He can help the baby deer to take out from water. After that, he can give him up. And he absorbed in Sadhan Bhajan, but he not doing so. He has some desire, oh, if I not nourish, not protect, we will do that. So it is not free from Anna Vilasa Sunnam. So his activity, his work is not complete. Uttama Bhakti.
Thank you. Thank you.
I will be in a stage of wrath. I have disaster.
They spoiled everything in the last. First, you should know that. What is the meaning of deviating? What is the meaning? He lost his bhakti? Or what? We should know.
Bhakti stagnant for some time.
So he was not deviating. We should understand. So he was not Siddha Bhakta. Sadhak. And he attained up to Bhav. Bhav. He was going in Bhav. Not Siddha, not Prem was there. But he was up to Bhav. And this is pure bhakti. Pure bhakti. Only what is loophole in this is bhakti. Not uninterrupted. He has not lost his bhakti. Bhakti only can be lost if he is doing Nama Aparad, Vaishnava Aparad, Guru Aparad. Only in this case. For some times, it was broken. It has been written in Srimad Bhagavatam that if karmis are following his varnashram dharma, what is gain? Nothing. They will have to go hell. And what harm if anyone has left his varnashram dharma, everything, duties to his children's wife and sisters and whole samaj,
society
he has left. And he is chanting and remembering Supreme Lord. What harm? If apakko means?
Immature stage.
If he dies or anything comes, no harm. Unless he is doing Nama Aparad and other things, Guru Aparad. But Jad Bharat or Bharat, has he done any Vaishnava Aparad, Nama Aparad? So his bhakti is not reduced. Oh, it was only what?
Stagnant.
For some time. His bhakti was there. But it seems that he lost his bhakti. No, never. Because no Vaishnava Aparad, nothing. So bhakti was stagnant for some time. Why? It was interrupted.
Bhagavad Icha? Bhagavad Icha?
No. Also it has been told. Vishwanath Chakravarti has told. It is for relation to others. But as a tattva, we should know it. That his bhakti was not
lost.
Only for some time it was
checked.
For some time. But when he took birth of deer, that bhakti, rati up to rati, was there. And he realized. And in his third Brahman, you see that he again began to do after that rati, always engaged in service of Lord. So you cannot say that he deviated from bhakti. But what is there? Anukullena Krishnanushilena. Anukulya means niranta, without interruption. Like honey. It was not like that. It was checked. What? Why? He gave his heart to. It is not aparad. What is? What this is? What we can call? Like a vighna.
Obstacle
like. But he did not lost his heart. So his bhakti was pure, but he stopped for some time. Because he did some wrong, anukullena, not niranta, nairantajyamai, taidudharavat abhichen nagati. What meaning?
It means that his cultivation of activities was not continuous and unbroken like a flow of honey from a jar.
Yes, that was his fault. And that is why his bhakti was checked. And again, when he became Brahmin or deer, he remembered everything. But not Uttama Bhakti. Why? Only for this reason. And after that, he began Rati, and then he may have Prem and Vaikuntha.
One of the aparas or offenses in chanting Harinam is to be attached to any material.
This was not in case of him. It was the wish of Krishna that men should learn something from him. And you should know, when the ruchi comes, then no, aparad ka avsar nahi rahta.
There's no chance,
opportunity to make any aparad. Especially in he has a rati. How he can do? So we should think.
The wish of Bhagavan. The desire of Bhagavan.
Yes. Desire and also wish.
For teaching.
Now, we see that it was not like spontaneous. Something came and stopped his bhakti. So, uttama it is not uttama. But bhakti. When he is going to cross rati and he will be situated truly, then this occasion will not come. So we should be careful. That is why it cannot be called uttama bhakti, but pure bhakti. Now,
who was his Aradhya
Dev?
Who was his Aradhya Dev?
Not mentioned.
What about Surya Narayan?
Especially not Krishna.
Doesn't it say Surya Narayan he was worshipping?
Like Narayan.
Vaikuntha Tattva. Some
Vaikuntha Tattva. Any of the Vaikuntha Tattva. Not Krishna. Especially Uttama Bhakti will be when it will be done to Krishna. Krishna Nushilanam, Krishna himself. Otherwise, not. Then Uttama Bhakti, if Brajendra Krishna. Not even to Krishna Dwarkadish, Vasudeva Krishna. Now, they can come.
What category is he? Gyani
Bhakta?
To whom?
Bharat Maharaj.
Oh, he is pure Bhakta. Pure Bhakta. Also mixed, it may be some Gyan. Because what he taught to Rohan, it seems something like it. So, importance of some tattva gyan, not nirvishesha, tattva gyan. When a devotee will cross the level of aswajya gyan, and he will forget that Krishna is not Supreme Lord, then that uttama bhakti really may come. Now, Ambarish Maharaj, we have time.
Time is running.
Or you can speak something, Ambarish Maharaj. Sanatan Goswami has told about Ambarish Maharaj. What?
Shuddha Bhakta.
Shuddha Bhakta. Okay. Ambarish Maharaj. Pure Bhakta. Oh, one thing more. First, we should explain the bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj and then
Ambarish.
Because Ambarish is later. Prahlad Maharaj.
Agyan Tirandasya Agyananjana Salakya Sakshavam Giritam Yena Tasmae Sri Gurudena Vansha Kaupatrukasya Vipasindu Eva Jyapatitanam Padane Pyo Vaishnave Pyo Namaha. Sri Gurudev ordered me to speak something on the teachings of Sri Prahlad Maharaj. What kind of bhakta is Prahlad Maharaj? How does he fit in this definition of Anya Vilasita Sunyam? And what are his teachings? The history of
Sri explained today only the teachings of Hiranyakaspu to his family persons after the death of his elder brother.
Hiranyakashipu, we all know Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranaksha, two brothers. Originally, they are giant Vidhi in Vaikuntha. This is a wonderful history, how their desire to please their Lord, their Ishtadev, Lord Narayan, manifested such a beautiful teaching for all living entities in this material world. Both Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they are having a wonderful relationship with Bhagavan. They wanted to give pleasure to their Lord in Vaikuntha, Jain Vijay, and by Krishna Jyogamaya, it was arranged that they would come in this material world and give pleasure to Bhagavan by virras, by fighting, by being his enemy. Who can be the enemy of Krishna, of Bhagavan? Only those who are very near and dear to him. They are equal. They can give him some pleasure in this virras. So knowing this, Jain Vijay, they had this desire, and by hearing Prabhu Yoganaya, they were cursed by four Kumaras to come in this material world and be the enemy of Bhagavan. So Hiranyaksha, he was killed by Varahadev in a ferocious fight, which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. He left his body, and all the family members were mourning, his wife, his mother, all the children, family members. And Hiranyakashipu, he was there trying to console them, giving them some good suggestions that really, yeah, they should not be worried so much. He spoke about Atmatattva. He gave the example of one king who was, the name I forgot.
Suyagya.
Suyagya. So the king, he was involved in a ferocious war, in a battle against the enemy, and he lost his life. But he had so many wives who were lamenting and lamenting and lamenting about his death. So Hiranyakashipu gave this example to the family members, the wife of Hiranyaksha, his mother, to illustrate that we should not lament for that which is temporary, that which is not really there, which is this physical material body. He explained how the wives of that king, again,
Suyagya,
how they were lamenting that now our husband has died in the battlefield. They brought his dead body back, and the wives lamenting, lamenting, oh, our husband, then who came there?
Yamaraj.
He came there. In disguise of a young boy. And he asked, why are you lamenting? We are lamenting. We are so much worried that our husband has left. So who has left? His body is still there. Who is your husband? And then Yamaraj went on to explain that really, if the body is your husband, then he has not left. The body is still there. So why are you lamenting? If you lament for him whom you cannot see, then how do you know who he is? If he has gone, who has gone? How does he look like? What is his form?
Have you seen?
Have you seen his form?
No.
So why lamenting? Every day, so many are dying, leaving their body, and nobody has seen them. Why not lament for them? In this way, Yamaraj went on to explain how really the living entity never dies. The living entity is eternal. The soul is eternal. By this example, Hiranyakashipu tried to
classify the family members of Hiranyaksha. And another example he gave, Bali, the two pigeons. The two pigeons were there, and there was one hunter. So the hunter had made a trap in the middle of the forest to catch the pigeon, the he pigeon and the sea pigeon. They were very happy together, the children. And they would go out every day to collect some food for the children. One day, they saw so much grains of rice in a beautiful spot in the forest. And the he pigeon, warned his wife, this is a trap. Don't go there. Any hunter may be there.
Don't fear.
Don't fear. Sea pigeon said, this is arrangement.
I'm telling to you, don't fear. Go on.
So the wife said also, don't be worried. This is arrangement of God. That so many nice grains are there, and we can easily collect them and bring it for our children. No, this must be a trap. I said, well, don't go. Anyhow, the wife went and to collect the grains, and sure enough, the hunter was waiting with his net and caught the sea pigeon in the net. And he was very happy. And the he pigeon, he was watching, I told you, don't go. Now you are stuck. And moreover, he was so much worried for her that he began to lament. And then he cried so much that hunter easily could see where he was situated. And the hunter took the arrow and also shot the he pigeon. In this way, the story illustrates that if anyone is forced due to time or circumstances to leave this world, we may lament. I think that this person has gone. But lamentation will not help. By lamenting more and more, then before we know it, it is our turn also, and we have to leave. But if we fix our attention on reality, that we are eternal parts and parcels of God. So Hiranyakasipu very nicely explaining all these things. He knew so well the conclusions of the Vedas. But he had one problem. His problem was that he didn't like to serve Vishnu favorably. He didn't like Vishnu at all.
Why he is called Asur?
That is why he is called Asur.
Why he is called Asur? What is the definition of Asur?
Asur means those who are not Sura. Sura means those who are favorable, always willing and desiring to be engaged in the service of the master. Asur means those who have no interest. They want to go against God. They want to
like
kill God. They want to deny God.
Bhau Bhute Sarge Lokeshmin Daiv Asuri Vacha Vishnu Bhavat Daiva and Asurahta. Those who don't serve Supreme Lord against him, or they be so much learned as Hiranyakasipu. But he was not favorable, he was against, and that is why he was.
He was against God, against the devotees, against everything. He wanted to be God himself, the center of everything, the enjoyer of everything, the master, the controller. This is Asuric mentality. Look how important I am. Nobody is like me. I can control, I can enjoy, I will do this, I will do this, and I will manage in such a way that tomorrow all my enemies will be vanished.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Thus ends the class on the 5th of December 2002 in the evening in Mubarambar. Hare Krishna.